Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the ChairShot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a Before the Bell Rings All-Star.
All right, everybody. It is Thursday night, July 24th, 2025. My God, July has come and gone, blown right past us. You are listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the ChairShot Radio Network, as always, to be found on thechairshot.com, where we remind you and encourage you to always use your heads. We got a bit of stuff to talk about here tonight, but before we do, I want to go around the room and introduce this cast of characters like I do each and every week. Starting with the resident high flyer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. He is Bucky's tag team partner. He hails from the Purple Haze and Cloud Nine. Man with a bionic back and destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, how are you?
I'm wonderful, my friends. How are you?
Been a rough week. We're going to talk about some of that here in a few minutes. But before we do, I want to introduce the host of the Rob the Genius Podcast. He is the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data. He is the official shoot bearer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, the king of the power naps, Ray Cash's daddy, and the man with the golden shovel, Mr. Rob, sir. How you doing, buddy?
Good to be here, and thank God the weekend's almost here.
Man, I hear you. I'll talk to you guys later. I've got some... personally a bad week, but we want to talk about the week in general. This has been a rough week for entertainment fans, wrestling fans, music fans, entertainment fans across the board. We lost three. This week was hard. There were three big ones this week in the last 4 days. And I want to preface this by saying with a couple of these people, there's probably a bit of negativity surrounding their lives and everything else. We don't want to talk about that here tonight. We want to talk about how they influenced us in the genres that they were in and how they influenced the genre that they were a part of. Going to start off here, we lost Malcolm Jamal Warner, Theo of The Cosby Show, at the very, very unfortunately young age of 54 on the 20th. 2 days later, we lost heavy metal icon Ozzy Osbourne on the 22nd at the age of 76 after a few year battle with Parkinson's. And then fresh today, on the 24th, we lost pro wrestling icon Hulk Hogan. And there's been a bit of processing. Today's been kind of a weird day because the news from Hulk has been strange. I followed it over the last couple weeks. The whole I don't even really know what happened, so I don't even want to get into that. But just if you follow on X and you've been following this situation, like his camp, there was news that something might not have been right. And then his camp was denying, and then, you know, lo and behold, here we are today. But I don't want to get down that road. I want to talk about, you know, let's start with Malcolm. The Cosby Show. Me and the guys talked a little bit in the pre-show, and, you know, and I'll let Rob kind of speak a bit more on what the Cosby Show meant to him. But to me, being a white person watching this show, I found it very enjoyable. And Theo was part of that. You know, Malcolm Jamal Warner, he was part of that. And his character, what I enjoyed was he had such good chemistry with Bill. He had such good chemistry with the rest of the cast. And he was just genuinely funny. He oozed charisma, and that show was part of my youth. You know, we didn't miss an episode. My brothers and I gathered around the TV, and it was a lot of fun. But to hear him gone at the age of 54, which to I believe was what, drowning?
Yeah, it was. He got caught in an undercurrent, I believe.
Oh, God. I hate to hear that, man. You hear that so much in Florida. That is such a thing here. I think he was in Costa Rica or something like that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So, Rob, go ahead and take over from here.
Okay. So the Cosby Show, it came, you know, when it came along, well, we were coming off of, you know, Good Times and the Jeffersons, and this was a different kind of show. It kind of just presented they weren't, I won't say middle class, it's probably not really, because, you know, the father was a doctor and the mom was a lawyer. Okay, but...
Sorry, Rob, I just have to jump in because this is the perfect segue for my one thing about the Cosby Show and Malcolm. So speaking of, you know, the fact that the Cosbys were rich, my father used the scene where Bill uses a bunch of Monopoly money, and he teaches Theo about budgeting. He hands Theo, say, $500 in Monopoly money and says, okay, you got to pay rent, take some money. You got to pay for your car, take some money. You got to take your girl out. And Theo, Malcolm, to his credit, playing Theo, was, you know, the snappy son in that instance. And much like me, and unknowingly, I did the same thing as him, where he takes money back, like, oh, I'll take the bus, and I will, you know, do this instead to save money. And, of course, you still end up on the losing end, because your father is smarter than you. Yeah. And they proved that in that scene. And to your point, DJ, the chemistry there was incredible. And last point, he clearly took what he learned from Bill and applied a lot of it when he was on Black-ish, you know, 20 years later. It's cool to see that kind of full circle moment for him as an actor. So, sorry, Rob, you kind of gave me the perfect segue there.
No, no problem.
Cosby's were rich.
But Theo, he was kind of a role model for black teenage boys. Because in previous shows, there wasn't one on the Jeffersons, because... and on Good Times, you know, you had JJ, and nobody wanted to be JJ. Okay. And, you know, so Theo was kind of that middle ground, you know, that kind of, like, he wasn't too cool for school, but he wasn't like an embarrassment either, or any kind of way. And so he was, he was a character that a lot of, you know, like teenagers identified with. And it's funny because, like, I was reading, like, at one point Malcolm thought the character wasn't very cool, and then he found out later that so many of us thought the character was, and that kind of changed his perspective. And and it was in the way that show ended, it was like a full circle moment. He graduated from college, and they flashed back to, like, when he and his dad were having that very conversation you were talking about in the first episode. You know, at,
Yep.
And, you know, Malcolm went on to have, you know, after the Cosby Show was over, he was on a few different shows, and, he did poetry. I think he made some music. He directed some things. So he went on to have a, you know, a very full career of his own afterwards. And, yeah, he'd been in several different projects because there've been tributes rolling in from people who have worked with him on various different things over the past couple of days. And, even though I hadn't personally seen anything he'd done in a while, you know, because he was on shows I just wasn't watching, you know, but, you know, Theo Huxtable is a character that, yeah, I mean, for us, you know, he was one of the most just relatable and enjoyable kind of characters that we had on television. And because he wasn't a ridiculous caricature, he wasn't J.J. Evans, he wasn't Urkel. Right. You could relate to all the things that he did on the show, you know, to trying to, you know, hook up with girls and hanging out with his friends and, you know, doing stupid guy things to get in trouble. And, you know, and then the conversation with his dad. The conversation with his dad very much, you know, would remind me of some conversations I have with my dad, you know, where, you know, it's just, It sucks. It sucks. But I hope that he knew how much he meant to us as, you know, as a character and just as someone to look up to and, you know, to see a good example of. And so just, all condolences to his family and his friends and other loved ones and, you know, thank you for, you know, for giving us all that you did, and, you know, rest in peace.
Yeah, gone way too young, man. 54. Rob, that's scary. That's literally 2 years older than me and 3 years older than you. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Rest in power. Rest in peace, Malcolm Jamal Warner, leaving behind a legacy. And you like to see that, and I wish, you know, he could have still been around longer. That sucks, man. Want to move on to another one. This one was a big one for me. Ozzy Osbourne, again, gone on the 22nd, literally 2 weeks after they did what was supposed to be a final concert with him and Black Sabbath, and there were tons of musicians that showed up on this final concert to just pay tribute to Ozzy. And the outpouring for him over the last, 2 days, 48 hours, has been amazing. And Ozzy was, like most of us that are into hard rock and heavy metal, Ozzy was our first. Because they, you know, Black Sabbath literally, like, invented the genre. One could argue that Led Zeppelin was kind of the precursor, but depending on what you consider metal, Black Sabbath invented that genre. And Ozzy was its front man. He was there. And, you know, I was introduced to him in the 80s. I was born in 73, so I missed the Black Sabbath era. And in my house, I could only hear what came on the radio. And because Ozzy, obviously with his career and his reputation, there was a certain stigma around who he was as a person and what he represented. And in my house, you weren't allowed to listen to that stuff. You know, so if I listened to it, it was on the sly. You know, because my mom fully bought into the bat eating and the whole thing. Like, my mom was like, "You're not listening to that stuff." Like, it was devil music, and I was like, "Okay, whatever." So we listened to it on the sly, but I wasn't real familiar with the Black Sabbath stuff beyond Iron Man. And as I mentioned, Iron Man that ties into this is a wrestling podcast. Ozzy was very integral in certain periods of time in the wrestling industry. Like, Iron Man was the Road Warriors entrance music for a long time. And yes, that was all part of the package. Like, the Road Warriors had a distinct look, and that song brought it all together. You know? And there's an argument to be made that, you know, Ozzy may not have gotten paid during that period of time for all of that. Because my understanding was they just used the music and hoped that nobody noticed. But as fans, we noticed. Through the years, Ozzy would do some work with WWE. I know he did a little DX thing back in 2009. And even as soon as, you know, recent history, 2022, he did a little intro video for WWE War Games. And they've used War Pigs, I think, what, 2 years now, Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rob, were you... I know your music tastes are kind of like mine, a bit eclectic, and you liked some hard rock and stuff like that. Were you ever, like, a big Ozzy fan, or was he just kind of there?
There were a few songs that I got into. It's funny, because I heard... Iron Man, of course, was the first one that I'd heard. And, you know, with the Road Warriors. And then I heard War Pigs. It wasn't his version. No, the first version of War Pigs I heard was actually on the Faith No More album.
Yeah.
They did a cover of it.
They did. It was a pretty good cover.
Yeah, and so that got me to go listen to the original. And crazy, like, T-Pain did one, the cover of a couple of years ago.
God, that's so good.
Yeah, and nobody was expecting that, but... I mean, he knocked it out of the park.
He did.
And so for me, those two and another favorite of mine was Crazy Train. So I guess for me, Ozzy was a play the hits act. You know, I knew the songs that everyone knew.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wasn't deep into the catalog or anything.
Yeah. I got a little story, an Ozzy-related story, but I'm going to let Jason go. Jason, were you a big Ozzy fan?
I can't say that I was a big Aussie fan, but I mean, like, he was he was just all over. Especially because I'm the youngest of us. Like, by the time I was, like, conscious of that stuff, he was in everything. He was in commercials, you know?
Yeah, he was doing the TV show by that point.
They had the Osbournes television show.
Yeah.
So I saw a bit of a different Aussie, but I mean, you know, and also, hey, Crazy Train was the theme of the, you know, the dynastic Tom Brady Patriots. So, and like Guitar Hero and like things like that. Like, yeah, it just, for me, he's just kind of a guy who was always like there, you know? I wasn't like a huge Black Sabbath fan or anything like that, but yeah, just one of those cultural icons who's just there, man.
Yeah. I ended up with, like I said, I'm going to tell a little bit of a story here with a kind of a funny ending. Like I said, I was born in 73, so I missed the Black Sabbath era. I was introduced to Ozzy in the 80s, and I, you know, obviously loved the radio hits. When I was about 17, I was a senior in high school, and I met this kid, Joni Redfern. And Joni and I had kind of known each other off and on through the years. He was a year younger than me. He played guitar, and he had a little heavy metal band. And he was looking for a singer. He's like, hey, can you sing? I'm like, no. And but I had the long hair and everything. He's like, well, you look like a singer. I've got a band. Why don't you come and sing for me? I'm like, dude, I can't sing. He's like, no, you'll be fine. Okay. So
that didn't stop Anthony Kiedis.
Okay. Exactly. Didn't stop him at all. So I'm like, you know what? Let's give this shit a try. So to say Jody was heavily influenced by Tony Iommi and Black Sabbath in general would probably be the understatement of the year, because his guitar playing was very much just... And I mean this in the serious, like, form of flattery. Imitation was here. The songs and the riffs that Jody was playing were very much Black Sabbath influenced. So we get in there, and he had the band by themselves without the singer were doing a cover of Black Sabbath's Paranoid, and I didn't know it. But Jody was a huge Black Sabbath fan, so he starts introducing me to the deeper library, like the deeper catalog of songs, and I was absolutely blown away, not only by like the music, because it was darker than the stuff I was listening to. You know, I grew up on Whitesnake and Bon Jovi and ZZ Top and, you know, stuff like that, and then there was this. But we started playing Paranoid, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And I'm like, you know what, so now I've been bitten by the rock star bug. And of course, you know, when I tell my parents, like, hey, I'm in a rock band, my dad, you know, no sells it. He's like, oh, you're an idiot. I'm like, no, I want to be a rock star. And he's like, no, shut your mouth. Quit being a dumbass and go join the army. You know, that's the type of dad I had. He was not taking this stuff seriously. But so we started to play, and we started to gel a little bit as a band, and we wrote this song. And I never told him anything about playing Paranoid or anything like that. I never played any of the music for him. But then one day we wrote this little song. It was a very simple song, a little 3-chord song that we wrote. I wrote some lyrics for it, and we recorded it. And back in the day, Jason, you're probably a little too young for this, but we had what were called tape decks, tape recorders. And you can
I listened to Bill Cosby himself, as we talked about earlier in this episode.
On VHS?
Tape. Cassette tape. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, you say I'm your favorite old, so you know I have to catch you up on the technology. Well,
sometimes
of the day.
I have to remind you I'm not that young. Jesus.
So we record this song, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to show my dad. This is a great song. I'm proud of this stuff, and he's going to hear it, and he's going to change his mind. He's like, yeah, why don't you chase that dream, kid? So I play it for him, and it wasn't great. Like I said, it was a very simple song, but I was very proud of it. And when the song's over, without missing a beat, he deadpan looks at me and says, yeah, you guys aren't Black Sabbath. And it was funny to me because it wasn't prompted. And there's a part of me that feels like, okay, we're trying to emulate, because I was trying to emulate Ozzy's vocal stylings and his inflections and the things that he did in songs. And without prompting my dad to say, yeah, we're heavily influenced by Black Sabbath, for him to look at me and go, yeah, you guys aren't Black Sabbath, that tells me we halfway nailed it. So just neat little thing. Ozzy was just so influential to me as, you know, as I would try to further my musical career. Not only as an influence, but just his music in general, the Black Sabbath stuff, the solo stuff. This one hits hard for me personally, because I'm a big, big fan. Crazy Train, that Rob mentioned earlier, is in my top three all-time hard rock metal songs. And, you know, Black Sabbath, both with Ozzy and Ronnie James Dio, are top three all-time hard rock heavy metal bands for me. So I'm with millions and millions around the world in mourning this week and processing this. But all I can say is, you know, Ozzy, thank you for years and years. I've pleasure of seeing him twice live. I saw him once at Ozfest in either 97 or 98. And then I saw him again in, I think, 2017. We saw him at Fort Rock down in Lauderdale. And he still sounded pretty good. Like, we're watching this, and you know, I remember Tina and I saying to each other, you know, I'm glad we saw this and her son saw this, because we knew he was getting older, and we're like, we don't know how much more of these he's got in him. And so for us to be able to see him, because it was her only time she'd ever seen him, and her son got to see him, it was my second time, absolutely just knocked it out of the park again. And I'm sad, you know, just very sad. And Ozzy, rest in peace, and again, thank you so, so much. Third up this week, these happened every other day. We had Malcolm Jamal Warner on the 20th, Ozzy on the 22nd. Today, July 24th, announced the death of one Hulk Hogan. And like I said at the beginning of this, I don't want to get into the negative side of this. I just want to talk about the character that I watched on my TV, what that meant to me as a kid, and what that meant to me as a wrestling fan through the decades. Because that career for me spanned nearly four decades. Because I started watching in the early to mid-80s, and I watched his career almost pretty much up to the end of it, which was in the 2000s. And, you know, and I know Rob's probably got some thoughts here. Rob, I'll let you take over, because I just occupied an entire segment. So,
so look, yeah, this is... for a lot of obvious reasons, this is not the easiest subject to talk about here. But keeping it within the lines of what we said we're going to do, you know, I got into professional wrestling because of Hulk Hogan, because I saw a poster with Hulk Hogan and Mr. T, those guys from the Rocky movie, and they were going to be at this thing called WrestleMania. And for a lot of people in me and DJ's age group, you know, that's where it started for us. The first, you know, wrestling show that I went to, my dad took me to, the main event was Hulk Hogan versus Terry Funk. I think I've said that before. And look, Hogan was the engine behind, you know, Vince McMahon turning the WWF into what it became. And that occurring is what took the wrestling business to the point where, like, look, you know, if the Hulk Hogan experiment didn't work, you know, we're not doing this podcast. I don't meet these two guys. A lot of you who are in different wrestling spaces and communities, you know, don't meet any of the people that you've met and have befriended. And, you know, and the wrestling business, you know, who knows what it would look like if it even would still exist, because Hulkamania started at a time where the wrestling business was about to undergo some serious transitioning in terms of the way you could broadcast to people. And so who knows what would have happened there. But we're sitting here today because of the career that Hulk Hogan had, and the, you know, the, and how it affected the business, how it took the business into, you know, into the 80s and the 90s and what have you. And then, you know, of course, and then in the mid 90s, you know, he switches, he becomes Hollywood Hogan, and basically gives it another jump start, you know, and which leads to the Attitude Era, which leads to, so, you know, some people came in with the first WrestleMania, some people came in during the Attitude Era. And his contribution to the wrestling business in those two eras is why we're sitting here right now. You know, and it's why it was the foundation for, you know, people to make, a lot of people to make the money they're making now in the wrestling business. It's the, you know, it's, so Hulk Hogan, the character, was and still is a foundational character in the history of professional wrestling, and an industry changing character in the history of professional wrestling. Now, look, to, you know, now, of course, there's a man behind the character, and that's an entirely different conversation. And when we've spoken about Terry Bollea before here, and, you know, we're not doing all that today. But, it's just, yeah, I'm so it's hard to talk about the character, but unfortunately, the way the last 10 years went, it's hard to talk about the character and not talk about the man. And, but in the interest of not, you know, going too far down the rabbit hole with that, I'll just simply say that, He squandered what could have been 10 years of pats on the backs and thank yous and nothing but that. He terribly squandered that with his own actions. But, you know, that does not mean that, you know, what he, you know, look, the success that he had and what it brought in the wrestling business, that still stands regardless of how he squandered it later on in his life. And so I'm not here to tell anybody how to react or what to say. There are different reactions all over the place today. Some people are flat out celebrating. Some people are sad. Some people are somewhere in between. I generally don't celebrate people dying, you know, unless you're, you know, some murderous type of dictator or something. So I'm not doing that, but, you know, I guess I'm doing my best to square the two things, right? Because for black wrestling fans, you know, if you grew up a Hulkamaniac, then it hurt like hell when that tape came out. And so, and trust me, for the last 10 years, a lot of us have been trying to square, those of us who grew up Hulkamaniacs, we're trying to square, you know, how you talk about the character, how you talk about the man, to what extent do you know, and to what extent do you even engage with him in any capacity? So for me, you know, I've always tried. I've acknowledged his contribution to the wrestling business. I've acknowledged, you know, the role that going to see Hulk Hogan played in my childhood and some really good memories with me and my dad. And I've always, you know, like I've said here on the show and on other shows that, you know, I acknowledge those things. And if I never see Terry Bollea on my television again in real time, then that's what I'd prefer. And, you know, for the most part, that's how it went. You know, I mean, he did come back this year and he got booed out of the building, and that was, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that was earned and that was deserved. But again, like I said, we're not doing a show. If Hulkamania doesn't succeed, we're not sitting here doing a show. You're not listening to us right now. You're listening to some podcast about something else, or you're watching TV or something else, and we're all doing something else. So, you know, I think just for this instance, I think it's best. Yeah, I think that's the best that I can put it right now. And I know I kind of went off the train here, but
that's okay. It's I wanted to give you your space to talk. This is what we're doing. We're talking through some things, and there's, unfortunately, of the three gentlemen we're talking about tonight, this is probably the most controversial. And like you said, I am not here to inform anybody of their opinion, and I don't fault anybody for feeling the way they feel. Either way, I'm probably in the middle, you know, because I obviously was very bothered by things that happened, but he was a part of my childhood. And before I get into that, I do want Jason, because you weren't there for the original Hulk Hogan ride, like the initial Hulkamania ride. You were a little too young for that. You came on board right...
No, I kind of knew him as, well, you knew who like, he was. Already a pop culture icon, right. You know? He had already kind of... I think... I remember him doing, like, Rocky III and... what was the stupid Thunder in Paradise and things like that. And I just didn't watch WWF or any wrestling like that. So I knew of him as a pop culture person. And then my real wrestling exposure was when I got into wrestling, which was Nitro during the Monday Night Wars. And he was, by the time I started watching, he had already shown up at Bash at the Beach, and the NWO was full tilt.
Yeah.
And Sting was on the verge of, you know, actually dropping down from the rafters. That's when I joined the wrestling sphere. So I obviously had a very different experience with Hulkster, because then when I came back, like, I already knew everything that, all his dirty laundry that had come out in the years afterwards. So, and Rob's, I mean, we're not trying to convince anybody that anybody we're talking about is an angel. We're not trying to convince anybody that they're you know, on the first train to hell. Like, at this point, we're just talking about these guys as characters and how they influenced our lives as basically children. So, I mean, Hollywood, and so I say that because of all the things I'm about to say. Hollywood was one of the greatest bad guys of my childhood. Like, if you asked me at a certain, you know, period, it would probably be like, I don't know, like, Saddam Hussein, Lex Luthor, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Like, that would be the three most evil men in my life. So, and because he did, when he finally did turn, he made every inch of it count. So, yeah, he was literally the bad guy for my hero, Sting. So, I can't, you know, he gave me an integral part of my wrestling experience. So that was cool. And then, yeah, like Rob said, you could have any sort of making strides to repair things could have happened, and he didn't. So it is what it is. But yeah, Hollywood Hulk Hogan, one of the greatest villains of all time.
Yeah, but growing up with the original run on Hulkamania, that was just phenomenon. Like, and to the point, Jason wasn't even a wrestling fan and knew who Hulk Hogan was. That was rarefied air, especially back then. I mean, wrestling, as Rob said, was getting ready to go through a change before the Hulkamania took off, and the change may not have necessarily been one in a positive direction. You know, pro wrestling as a entertainment medium was going to go one of two ways. is either going to go back to the back alley bars and be whatever it was, or it was going to be something global, and Vince and Hogan took it global and quite frankly saved it. You know, with that character and that momentum and that push and that belief in it, it saved, because I watched wrestling before WWF. I watched NWA that would become WCW. So I was watching before Hulkamania, but I don't know if I would have kept watching. Like, eventually I was going to outgrow this stuff, or it just wasn't going to interest me as much. What they were doing in WWF was decidedly different. And it caught my attention. Like Rob said, there's Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. I like Mr. T. Mr. T was in Rocky III. Mr. T was on the A-Team. I like Mr. T. I want to see what Mr. T's doing. And that tie-in with Hulk Hogan is what dragged all of us to the table. If you're listening to us, in some way or another, Hulk Hogan, the character, was a part of that. And I don't want to ignore that, you know, in spite of the rest of it. In closing on this, I will say that it's a shame that unfortunately is going to be his legacy, but I would say thank you for the decades of sports entertainment, because it meant a lot to me as a kid. It meant a lot to me during the Monday Night Wars as an adult. And, you know, those are memories, because specifically the Monday Night Wars, I have a very close-knit group of friends. We call ourselves the Four Horsemen. It's me, Jay, Brian, and Eddie. And we bonded as friends over that era. Like, it was appointment viewing. We had one TV going on Nitro, one going on Raw, and if we didn't have two TVs, we flipped back and forth. And that was just, that was a weekly ritual, man. And that, he just was, Hogan was just a part of some of the best periods in my life. And I can't overlook that as a wrestling fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so I would, I guess my closing is, if you don't, you know, it's fine to not have anything positive to say about the man from your own personal perspective. That's fine. If you are find yourself being forced to think of something about him, you know, you can look at the relationships that you've made by being a wrestling fan. And, you know, if you find yourself in a situation where Hulk Hogan is being forced on you through some video package or something, and some show you're at or something, I would say just, you know, we've all made relationships and friendships, you know, through professional wrestling. And, you know, I focus on that. And I'm rambling here. It's not an easy subject. For some of y'all, it is. Some of y'all were not fans during his heyday. And so he did, you know,
there's no emotional connection.
Yeah. So it's very, and look, and if y'all just want to say, hey, fuck that guy, I get it. Right. I'm not telling you not to. For those of us, again, because look, you can't, in order to get hurt, you have to feel something towards somebody, right, for them to hurt you.
Right.
And that's kind of what it is. And for, like, those of us who grew up with them, and that's why it is kind of hard talking about it here, because it's not as simple as, oh, well, fuck that guy, whatever, right? It's just because, you know, like I said, I lost my dad a few years ago, and when I think about the good times with my dad, and I had some of those involved going to see Hulk Hogan, right? So it's not that simple for me to just dismiss everything like that. Yeah. It's not. And look, I don't have a right answer here. Okay. I don't. I mean, look, we all deal with, because I dare say most of us, if you're a fan of any form of, if you're a regular participant in any form of entertainment, whether it's music or books or movies or wrestling or video games or whatever, at some point, somebody who you are a fan of, is, you're going to find out some things about them. You know, of all the people who perform, there are going to be people you find out some things about and you're just like, oh, brother. And, you know, you're going to have to square your fandom of that person's work with what it is you found out about them.
Compartmentalize.
And look, there's no perfect way to do it. We handle it differently with different people. It's always messy. You know, it's never, you know, quite frankly, look, if anybody wants to criticize me for the way I chose to handle any of those things with any of the people I'm a fan of, I will just say, okay, yeah, you're right. It's just, yeah, it's not easy. And it's messy. And so, however you choose to, you know, whatever your reaction is, you know, we're not here to police it.
Yeah.
We're not. And, so, but in this case, we are acknowledging his contribution to this thing that we all are fans of, and that this thing that has us here doing this podcast, and this thing that had led to the three of us becoming friends.
Yeah. And before we go to commercial again, just one last time, Malcolm Jamal Warner, Ozzy Osbourne, Hulk Hogan, all three of you, rest in power. Thank you for all the memories. We're going to go to commercial. When we come back, TNA had a huge event this weekend. I'm pretty sure Rob and Jason both talked about it or want to talk about it. They both watched it. I have not watched it, so I'm going to kind of sit back in the background. They're going to take that over after the break. Before we go to break, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the t-shirt options available from your favorite Chairshot Radio Network podcasts, including this one, the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. We have a t-shirt represented there. Pick one up. The starving artist on these shows will thank you. Your bodies will thank you if you spend a couple extra bucks and pick one up in soft style. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And we are back. I want to thank you for continuing to support not only the Chairshot Radio Network, but the Mindless Wrestling Podcast and all the podcasts and content available to you from thechairshot.com. We've got podcasts galore. We've got articles galore. Everything from sports to entertainment, sports entertainment. That is thechairshot.com. Jason and Rob watched TNA Slammiversary over the weekend. I did not. I'm going to turn the show over to the boys. And if I find anything that I want to chime in on, I will. But for now, I'm going to turn it over to them as customary. Jason has the card pulled up. Jason, the floor is yours.
All right, so we had Rob, forgive me, because I did not watch the pre-show, so I'm going to go.
I did not watch it either.
Well, the Elegance Brand, Ash by Elegance, and Heather by Elegance defeated the Inspiration, who are now, you know, Cassie Lee and Jessica McKay, formerly known as the Iconics in TNA and WWE. It's just good to see them back. I'm mad I missed it. Missed their match. Glad they lost, because then probably just going to win it down the road, because apparently they're fully signed to TNA now, and they are the Inspiration. So welcome back, girls. Again, I'm sorry I missed it. I'm very excited to see what happens. And then the Hometown Man defeated Eric Young. So great. So the real show started with Real One and Josh Bishop. Real One, of course, being known as Enzo Amore to you, to us WWE fans. So they teamed up with Zilla Fatu, who, let's just get that kid's contract up and get him over to to play with the rest of the family, because I'm very excited to see what that young man looks like in the next like three to 5 years. But anyway, they defeated Steve Macklin, Jake Something and Mance Warner, with the lovely Steph Delinder, being comedic and wonderful as always. So I had a lot of fun with this match. I'm excited to see what happens with Zilla and his TNA career. Like, obviously, let's not rush things. So, Rob, what'd you think of the opening six-man tag?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like you. You know, Zilla, he's been working various indie companies. I think he's also done some time with Booker over there in Reality of Wrestling. And yeah, so we, look, we know it's only a matter of time. We know, you know. And one guy, yeah, I had been, you know, when Mance Warner first came in there, I had been looking forward to seeing him. But to me, he's kind of out, misplaced because he's a deathmatch guy. I saw him a lot in MLW. His wheelhouse is doing deathmatch kind of stuff. And he's a much better wrestler and character when he's in that kind of mode. So yeah, I do think he's kind of, he'd probably fit better in AEW, to be honest. You know, cause, you know, having him be like, just being like a, you know, wrestler is not quite, you know, what works for him. But, you know, biggest thing is like, yeah, Lazilla, let's go. Let's see how this thing turns out, man.
Awesome. So next up, we had, two of our favorite guys, Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali facing off. Mustafa Ali got the win and they just gave us 15 minutes of fun. If you can watch this match, anybody within the sound of my voice, maybe it's just because I like their style particularly. Like, they wrestle the video game super style, but they also don't, they bring it right to the edge of believability. And this was no different. So, and Mustafa picked up the win. So, yeah, Rob, what do you think of seeing these guys in action again?
Look, always good to see them go at it again. And, oh, and I gotta give a shout out to Tasha Steeles for, doing her best Candice LeRae, impersonation, take the lumbar jack.
Oh my god, that is one clip I did see. Holy shit! That is an underrated finisher anyway. And when I saw her take that, I was like, my god, my old back hurt watching it.
Yeah, and honestly, it was perfect because it set up the finish because she took it and then, you know, that left Cedric open to get caught with the 450 from Ali.
Dude. And yeah, nobody gives that move better than Cedric. Or their variations thereof with that, like, knees to the back, you know, slam kind of move. Like, his is the absolute best. And she took it like a champ.
Yeah.
And so didn't pull that at all. He was just like, yep, we're going, we're doing this. I'm popping you into the air.
And also, I mean, just really also like that Ali is getting to do the kind of thing he's been wanting to do, character-wise.
Right. This politician character, like, is so good. He's clearly, like, just eating it up.
Yeah.
So, good to see those boys in action. So then, next up, we have Matt Cardona and The System, Brian Myers, Eddie Edwards, and JDC, defeated Dark State coming in from NXT. This match was fine. Matt Cardona is Matt Cardona, and all of those guys are who they are. Love Eddie Edwards. He's the best. And Dark State is Dark State. So, yeah. This match was only just shy of 7 minutes. Rob, anything to say here? If you go beyond 30 seconds, I'm muting you.
Fine. 6-10 to match that on a pay-per-view.
All right. So next up, though, we're going to talk a lot about this. Tessa Blanchard and Indy Hartwell faced off. And boy, howdy, the crowd was hot. The match was awesome. Tessa got some chance that definitely came through on TV. And Indy picked up the win. So, like, all in all, this was like 5 stars. Because also Tessa, you know, not for nothing, is a good professional, is a great professional wrestler. So she made Indy look great. So, and she was eating crap the whole time.
I have a question.
A win's a win. Win is a win. Yeah, DJ, what is your question?
I, you guys know, Indy Hartwell is one that I have been pushing for forever, and I took it personally when they released her from WWE a few months ago. I read on the app formerly known as Twitter that Indy really didn't look very good, which seems out of character. How did Indy look in this match? Because I haven't seen it.
Step slow at points is the worst I could tell you.
Okay. Okay.
Like, it wasn't her. What is it? Her best match I've ever seen from her? No. Is she still way better than she was even like a year ago? Yeah. So all in all, it's a wash. And yeah.
And for me, like, it's good they're giving that. You know, she's getting some type of push, and you know that she, you know, she got to win something. You know, and cause, I mean, that's the most important thing. Because look, I mean, in her time on the main roster, ultimately, you know, they got to the point where she was a jobber, and that, you know, there comes a point where it's just, you know, there's nothing you can do with that. So it's good to see her get a chance to do something here.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Okay.
So next up, we had the winner-take-all match for the TNA Knockouts World Championship and the NXT Women's Championship. Obviously, Jason James bringing her title into town, bringing her NXT title into enemy territory, putting it up against Masha Slamovic and her TNA Knockouts World Championship. And I said at the very beginning, man, when this whole thing started, just do home and home. Home team wins 99% of the time. Do it that way, and you'll be fine. Now, if I'm TNA, I hope I have some ironclad expectations and promises, because JC is now your NXT Women's Champion and the TNA Knockouts World Champion, JC Jane. And her promo, by the way, on Tuesday was incredible. She called out all the haters in kayfabe and in real life and told y'all this, exactly where you can stick it. And it was amazing. And I say this, like, with all the love in the world, you go, girl. That was awesome. Rob, what did you think of that and the aftermath?
Well, okay, so look, we put her over big this week.
Okay.
When we're talking about Evolution. So to that end, look, all congrats to her. Look, she has earned her position, I would say. And those of y'all who continue to crap on her are, you know, y'all just being haters basically at this point. And look, they had a good match. And I was surprised at the ending. And like you said, the main event we'll get to later. So we're going to find out. This is kind of a point where they're asking a lot of people to trust the process, so to speak. It all depends on how things, Bound for Glory is their biggest show of the year. And several times during this show, they said that we are on the road to Bound for Glory. So to that end, this result here and then the result in the main event that we'll talk about later in a few minutes, that it all depends. A lot of it's just riding on the payoff. If the payoff is, if the payoff is done right, then everything's fine. If it's not, then, then we gotta have another conversation here. But, again, congratulations, JC. More than anything else.
Yeah, if nothing else, she's running with the ball they handed her. So, the booking and the, TNA's feelings and whatnot are not her problem,
Yeah.
So, hey, she's, and like I said, that promo on Tuesday was incredible. So next up, we had Leon Slater and Moose for the TNA X Division Championship. Leon Slater, that kid is a bona fide, just star. I think he is real good. I've been watching him since, Rob, you brought him to my attention and when I was in and out of TNA. yeah, this kid has got it all. And then he got, you know, he got his hand raised by AJ Styles. So that was pretty cool. But then, but Rob, what did you think of this match, first off?
Oh, well, for me, this was match of the night for me. And, yeah, I mean, Leon Slater, that kid is incredible. And yeah, I mean, this was just, it was a great match, you know, on both their parts. And to me, it was match of the night. And, you know, with some of the other decisions on the card, you had to give some, you know, you had to have a couple of other ones to just create some happy moments, you know, just so people wouldn't be hanging on some of those controversial decisions. This was a big time one. He's the youngest ever X Division champion. And, you know, the post match where AJ Styles returned to TNA and he put the kid over huge. And, like, you couldn't ask to be put over bigger than AJ put him over after that match. And, you know, and then, you know, he came out, AJ came out to his TNA theme music, and there were people all over our Twitter timelines who were just euphoric over that. Now, look, I was not there for that era of TNA, but for those of you who were, this was, you know, happy for all of you that got to, you know, hear that theme one more time. And, yes, you know, I saw a lot of people posting on, you know, on social media side by side, you know, saying we need this match, being Leon Slater and Javon Evans.
Yeah. That's cool. I have a feeling that might happen at some point.
That, yeah, I mean,
but yeah, dude, Leon, nothing but the best for Leon Slater. That kid is going to be something.
Yeah. And yeah, just love seeing AJ come out there also. And yeah, for me, that was mentioned tonight, and maybe in possibly the kind of happy moment of the night also.
Oh, dude, I wasn't even around. I did not watch TNA and whatnot. I don't remember Get Ready to Fly. But, dude, when he came out to that, like, it was quite the moment. And
it means, something
the song
to
rips,
some of us.
So it's such a wrestling, like, ringtone-ish song. Sorry, DJ, you were going
to
say something?
No, I'm just saying, for some of us, that shit meant something, with AJ coming out to that song.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, to some of us, that's a big fucking deal.
Oh, and I get it, because, like, you know, the song works as a wrestling song, you know? The theme song's awesome. So, that's all I was trying to say. But next up, we had a absolute car crash of a match, because we had a Fatal 4-Way Tag Team Ladder Match for the TNA World Tag Team Championships. We had Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy, the Hardys, getting the Wayback Machine one more time, fighting off the Namus, the Rascals, and First Class, of course, being Casey Navarro and AJ Francis, to win the TNA World Tag Team Championship. Jeff won it via getting them off using a rope ladder, by the way.
That was really cool.
That was bonkers.
Yeah. Jeff, you're a crazy man. Yeah, because they made it a point to say that all the, you know, the regular ladders were broken. And it was like, well, what the hell are they going to do? And I immediately thought, okay, well, what crazy shit is Jeff Hardy going to do? And he grabbed some device and pushed a button, and then the rope ladder descended. It was like, Jeff, you crazy motherfucker. And
it was perfect wrestling nonsense.
Yeah. And also, look, so AJ Francis, buddy, that was a great moonsault off the ladder you did. But that bump's outside. Don't ever do that shit again.
That boy almost took out his own top. He almost took out his own little top dollar there.
Dude. Like, legit. I was like, I think his legs are gone. Like, he crushed into powder.
Yeah. I saw that clip, too. That was hard to watch. I saw the moonsault, which looked amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
this dude takes the most wicked, ridiculous bumps. Like, remember when he stood on his head to the outside in SmackDown, on SmackDown? And then he just walks away. Oh, it's ridiculous.
Craziness.
Yeah.
AJ, take care of yourself, please.
Yeah. Listen, you guys are coming to Baltimore in a couple of months. I want you to be, you know, you're coming home to Baltimore to do a show in a couple of months. We need you to be upright and walking, okay?
And Rob's going to come to Bound for Glory and LOL, because that's what I'm doing for my birthday. So you got to rest up for that, too. So we finished up with the – hopefully we'll see the end of this saga, because it did not end here. Spoiler alert. Trick Williams defended his TNA World Championship World Championship in a three-way match against Joe Hendry and Mike Santana. And I thought for all the world Mike Santana was going to win this until he didn't. And wow. So now NXT holds all the cards. Rob, what are we doing? Are we literally, this will be the third promotion that will copy WrestleMania 40's homework, and we'll get, you know, the TNA Avengers at Bound for Glory for in at least one of the matches?
I think so. It better be.
man that you are, trendsetter.
I mean, well, first, let's put over Trick's entrance. That was outstanding, the whole choir singing and everything. This is one of those things where, okay, like, again, the people who run TNA, you're asking your fans to put a lot of trust in the process here. If it all, you know, if it all goes the right way at Bound for Glory, then this is fine. Then it's a great bump in the road and all of that. If it doesn't, then, oh, brother. Those of us who've been sticking our chest out and saying, see, this is how you do a partnership. We're going to have some egg on our faces if this doesn't pan out right and Bound for Glory, you know?
I think you were on something, Rob, though, how early they started pushing Bound for Glory. That's kind of nuts. Like, I can't say I've watched all the many Slammiversaries, but I've watched a couple like after the fact, and I just don't remember that. So
no, normally they
don't. Almost as if they are putting the subliminal and not so subliminal carrot in front of everyone's faces. I was going to say their fans, but really everybody, and saying the story is continuing. The story is continuing. But hey, guys, before this story beat even happens, we're letting you know the story is continuing. Because this story beat's going to make you mad. The story is continuing. So I want you got to be – they got to be going for the big finish for both of them at Bound for Glory.
Yes. And also, let's put over Mike Santana, because he had been there previously. He was in the tag team. There were LAX. He left with, I forgot Ortiz's first name, but they went to AEW and they kind of got lost in the shuffle and they split up because Mike had bigger goals and I think Ortiz just wanted to keep doing the tag team stuff. So they split. He came back to TNA as a single wrestler. And he's another one of those guys where nobody called this, you know, other than him, right? And the people at TNA who believed in him. But none of us called this, him, you know, turning into all of this. And so, you know, we talk about betting on yourself. He did that. You know, he could have stayed in AEW, just kept cashing a check. But he bet on himself, came back to TNA as a solo act. And now, look, all things are set for him to win the TNA World Championship at their biggest show of the year. And a year ago, that was not something people were thinking might happen. So, you know, kudos to Mike for believing in himself and coming back and, you know, taking his career in his own hands again and making something out of this.
Saw a lot of chatter on the timeline as we talk about the two big things there, the Knockouts Championship and the TNA World Championship, remaining in the hands of, or ending up in the hands of, as it were, with the Knockouts Championship of TNA or of NXT talent. And a lot of people were really, really mad about that, and especially with the Santana thing, because a lot of people were thinking that Slammiversary would be the day you crown Santana. A lot of people just don't. You're taking money out of the bag. if Bound for Glory is their biggest show of the year, that's their WrestleMania, that's the payoff. That's the ticket. You know, it's almost like doing Cody versus Roman at the Royal Rumble and then teasing something else for WrestleMania. You know, it just doesn't work that way. And obviously, Slammiversary was a pay-per-view or premium live event or whatever they're calling it over in TNA. It was obviously an event in and of itself, but it was also meant to build the next beat in the story. And the next beat in the story is Bound for Glory. And that's the way you build wrestling stories. And so many people just don't like to play the long game. Now, like Rob said, we're all going to look dumb if they don't stick the landing. And on most of these things, I am usually team let it play out. You know, I usually trust the process, and unfortunately it's wrestling. A lot of times I get burnt because they just don't stick the landing. But I'm willing to see this one out. I'm willing to see where it's going, because I can't imagine after the way shit went down with TNA and AEW that TNA entered yet another agreement where they were going to get cuckolded. I refuse to believe that. So this is why, you know, the not the smart part of my brain, but the reasonably intelligent part of my brain is telling me that there's a payoff coming and that it's going to be Bound for Glory. Because TNA just can't keep taking it on the chin. You know, at some point, they got to have something big, and why not do it at your biggest show of the year?
Exactly.
And again, the breadcrumbs are very much there. We're not just connecting dots that we made. Like they all but told us that, you know, based on their advertising, and then kind of through Trick's not going to hold that thing forever, and the fact that he's very readily appearing on both shows, like they're it's going towards the payoff of him eating a big L.
Yeah, it's got to. And because look, it's not like, I mean, He's got a date with the main roster coming soon, and so it's not like he's going to be hanging around there to be the TNA pro champion for a year or something.
No.
While we're talking about him, just, you know, this has been a hell of a year and a half for him, and so, you know, he's got a big future ahead of him, but this has got to, you know, all signs look towards, you know, this thing being paid off of Bound for Glory, and it better, you know. So I know this is, you know, this is one of those times we got to, you know, got to trust the process here, and if it doesn't go the way that it should, then, you know, we'll be the first ones to come on here and eat it, but we're hoping that it will.
Well, we'll also admonish, because, I mean, at this point, it's like, okay, you've set the table, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out. I'm looking forward to it. I know I keep talking about it, about getting the TNA service. I just, one thing leads to another, and I just keep forgetting to do it. I need to go ahead and do that, because they've got my attention for Bound for Glory. This looks like it's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah. And so now they're coming to Baltimore, like, for one of, they're doing one of their, like, they have these kind of, like, B pay-per-views that are on, like, TNA Plus service only.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing, that's going to be in Baltimore, and I am going.
Oh, have fun with that.
Yes, and it's during August, and so, yeah, I will be going to that. And, look, all in all, look, it was a good show. I mean, you know, some things are hinging on future, you know, booking decisions, but I would say all in all, it was a good show. They had their biggest crowd ever, like over 7,000 people. And so if nothing else, if when we're looking at this partnership, it has paid off. They are drawing bigger crowds. And that's something that did not happen. Now, of course, with a lot of the AEW stuff happened during the pandemic, of course, but here, at least, there is a payoff here. So, I mean, there has been the benefit so far.
Well, and now they're shopping around a TV deal, like a real TV deal.
Yeah.
So that's huge for them.
It is.
guys, mark my words, everybody mocked me. AEW had, I said it a year ago, before WWE even got involved with TNA. I said, you keep an eye on TNA, because if AEW keeps screwing around, they're going to find themselves the number three promotion in North America. And I stand by that, because TNA just keeps making moves. Obviously, the partnership with NXT and WWE is helping further a lot of that along. But I called it a year ago. I started seeing them make some big moves, and I stand by that statement. I fully endorse whatever TNA is doing at the moment.
Well, I mean, they've been a real TV deal away for a little while now. Like, they've been nipping at everybody's heels, you know?
To me, that's the last piece of the puzzle for them.
They've been just quietly sitting there doing some great stuff. And just kind of sitting in their corner, and always, every time I tune into TNA, the number one thing I walk away from, and it is true still, even with this WWE thing, is they know exactly who they are. And they don't run from it, and they are proud of it, and I'm not saying they, like, you know, are down on themselves as, like, the third or whatever North American promotion. They just are true to professional wrestling. And they keep the magic alive, you know? So, I hope they can get a good cable deal and get more eyes on this stuff, because they're doing good stuff right now.
Yep. All right. Well, guys, I don't have anything else. If you guys want to get out of here, we can cut out a little bit early tonight.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. I'm good. Well, we'll go back around the room here like I always do and thank my co-hosts, starting with the host of the Rob the Genius podcast. Rob, sir, thank you for a good show.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
And always a pleasure having you on here. And Bucky's tag team partner, Jason, sir, thank you as always.
And as the ultimate podcast partner, I am going to plug my friend's podcast, the Rob the Genius podcast, because me and my buddy Jace were guest stars, and we talked Superman the movie, the new one, 2025. We had a lot of fun. So go check that out, and Rob the Genius on all your podcast platforms.
And as always, I'm the man with the award-winning and holy beard, DJ. You've been listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. Remember, you can call it pro wrestling, you can call it sports entertainment, you can call it whatever you want. But call it in the ring, and we're out of here till next week, where we will be talking SummerSlam.